Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
Among the militant secularists are many so-called progressives.
Thank you for all your support.
But where is the progress? We are told we are living in a post-Christian era. But what has replaced the Judeo-Christian moral system? What is it that can fill the spiritual void in the hearts of the individual person? And what is the system of values that can sustain human social life? The fact is that no secular creed has emerged capable of performing the role of religion. This is not decay. This is organized destruction. Secularists and their allies have marshaled all the forces of mass communication, popular culture, the entertainment industry, and academia in an unremitting assault on religion and traditional values.
That is a clip from William Barr's talk at Notre Dame on Friday. And if you get a chance, look it up and do some reading about it. And it's particularly troubling the way some on the left are responding to it, claiming that he's trying to take us back to the Dark Ages and when women should be, quote-unquote, barefoot and pregnant and staying in the home. And that's not what he's saying. He was simply looking at the natural law and Judeo-Christian principles and how those principles, and especially within the Catholic Church, because he is a devout Catholic, that these principles, these universal teachings, are just that they're universal. We are against abortion, not just for Catholics, for all people, because it's evil, it's death, it's damaging. So when the church says something, it's not saying, oh, you can only be Catholic, you can only believe it if you're Catholic. No, it's because it comes from thousands of years of teaching handed on by Christ and the apostles that have proven to be true over and over again. And it's very sad, but at the same time, it's very revealing. And it was a powerful talk about the importance of religious freedom and what's happening in our country and how it's, again, to me, after listening to good chunks of the speech, it is a case of projection and hearing the other people complain about it, where they're claiming that we're the ones who are dictating, and yet they're the ones who are dictating to us. You must believe in abortion on demand through 9 months of pregnancy. You must think that any type of relationship is okay. You must think that changing your sex is okay and having the government pay for it is okay. Okay, and if you don't, you are a hater, you are a xenophobe, you are a homophobe, you are everything under the sun. So their dictatorship of relativism, they are projecting on us, and yet again, here they are saying that we're the ones who are dictating. And that's simply not true. So it's a very revealing presentation that William Barr gave on Friday to the students of Notre Dame, and if you have a chance, take a look at it. We'll have a couple more bites in the news. Coming up this morning, oh, and by the way, a lot of what he says ties in directly to the many great quotes and writings of our new saint, Cardinal John Henry Newman, who was canonized over the weekend. And I love this quote. He said, "We can believe what we choose. However, we are answerable for what we choose to believe." Very powerful. So coming up in the program today, we are going to be talking about a number of things, including the truth of the dignity of the human person from conception until natural death. Bobby Schindler is going to be joining us to do a follow-up on the story that we've been covering here on EWTN and Crest in the Afternoon, a case in Michigan regarding pulling life support from a young boy, and the mother is still fighting. They've been given a court deadline. We'll have the latest, and Bobby will look at the big picture and the implications, and we'll take your calls. Beautiful book about beautiful. Being beautiful and beauty in God's eyes in terms of music. We'll check that out. And then wrapping up on a Monday morning with Gail Buckley and her scripture verse of the week. So a lot to talk about, already almost 5 minutes past the hour. So let's get to the news, and then we'll open up the phone lines and take your calls and give you the number to call in. Right now, let's see what's happening in and around our world on a Monday morning, October 14th, 2019. Pope Francis at yesterday's canonization mass in St. Peter's Square declaring Cardinal John Henry Newman and four others saints, saying the ultimate goal is not health or wellness, but the encounter with Jesus. He alone frees us from evil and heals our hearts. Only an encounter with him, he said, can save and can make us feel that life is full and beautiful. U.S. Attorney General William Barr is saying there is a relentless attack on religious values. During his speech Friday at University of Notre Dame, Barr saying decades of efforts to undermine religion, leading to growing rates of children born to unmarried mothers, drug use, and angry, alienated young males.
Modern secularists dismiss this idea of morality as sort of otherworldly superstition imposed by a killjoy clergy. But in fact, Judeo-Christian moral standards are the ultimate utilitarian rules for human conduct.
Barr encouraging the students to defend religious freedom because it benefits not only Christians, but all of society.
In other words, religion helps frame a moral culture within society that instills and reinforces moral discipline.
And he also said the attack on traditional values is leading to immense suffering and misery. California Governor Gavin Newsom signing a bill into law over the weekend that requires public colleges and universities in the state to distribute abortion drugs. Lila Rose, a president of Live Action, calling the governor's act a travesty, saying that the law turns universities into abortion centers and perpetuates the lie that women need to kill their children in order to achieve their dreams and their goals. Catholic League President Bill Donahue is saying the Democratic candidates failed the religion test for falling over themselves, trying to prove who is the most severe in dealing with religious freedom issues, adding all of the candidates incline against religious exemptions, some more than others, making them the least religion-friendly candidates for president in the history of the country. Defense Secretary Mark Esper is confirming that roughly 1,000 U.S. troops will be pulling out of northern Syria.
We have American forces likely caught between two opposing advancing armies, and it's a very untenable situation.
On CBS's Face the Nation, Esper saying he spoke with the president who directed the deliberate withdrawal of forces from the area. According to Esper, the situation in the region is continuing to escalate. He says a decision was made, though, to avoid putting American troops in harm's way any longer. While the strike by the UAW against General Motors continues, so do the talks. Among the offers made so far by General Motors is to build an electric pickup at the Detroit Hamtramck assembly plant that's within the city, which is one of four unallocated factories in the country. Analyst Paul Eisenstein of the Detroit Bureau says this is significant.
This is an important thing, and this is one of the things I believe that they were hoping would get workers on board, saving one of the plants that was going to close.
As of Friday night, the automaker was also offering to invest $9 billion into its factories. That's up by $2 billion from what was pledged last month. Weather conditions are helping firefighters as Phil Hewlett reports get the upper hand on that Saddle Ridge fire, which is burning north of Los Angeles.
Firefighters are taking advantage of lower wind speeds, increasing humidity, and decreased temperatures as firefighters mop up remaining hot spots of the fire that has burned nearly 8,000 acres of land, destroyed 23 homes and businesses, and damaged another 17. The fire is 42% contained, and fire crews expect that number to be revised up dramatically after the morning assessment.
Representative Lee Zeldin supports President Trump's request for Ukraine to investigate former Vice President Joe Biden.
I absolutely believe that our countries should be working together to get to the bottom of what happened, whether it's Burisma, it's Joe Biden, it's Zelensky, it's Hunter Biden.
On ABC's This Week, Zeldin saying he believes the two countries should work together to find out the truth about what happened. Zeldin says he does not believe that Biden should be immune to investigation. The New York Republican saying he had an issue with Hunter Biden being paid $50,000 a month from a corrupt company, even with no energy or Ukraine experience or background. Emergency officials in New Orleans say they'll work as long as it takes to locate a man they believe may still be alive underneath the partially collapsed Hard Rock Hotel. Rescue crews started working yesterday after part of the hotel under construction collapsed on Saturday, the accident killing two workers and then trapping a third. If you ask the IRS for an extension in the April deadline, in April for the deadline to file and pay all those taxes, well, it's right around the corner. Actually, the extension deadline, tomorrow. So people who don't file by then will be hit with a fine of 5% a month on those unpaid taxes. The IRS saying more than 1 in 10 taxpayers asked for an extension this year. And the anniversary of Christopher Columbus' arrival in the Americas is here today, marking Columbus Day, a national holiday celebrating the Italian explorer who sailed the ocean blue more than 500 years ago. In observance, most federal offices, banks, and post offices will be closed today. Hope you're having a beautiful Monday so far. It's already 10 minutes past the hour on a Monday morning edition of Catholic Connection. If you'd like to join the conversation, we welcome your calls and your questions. That phone number is 877-573-7825. Again, 877-573-7825. So much to talk about, so little time. We will take a break and come back, and we will talk about beauty, where to find it. How about music? New book out just about that. We'll be right back.
Would you get on a plane that doesn't have a pilot? Investing in passive index mutual funds may present the same issue. The Ave Maria Mutual Funds are actively managed by seasoned investment professionals to help you meet your investment goals in a morally responsible way. Ave Maria funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors could invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Fund. You can learn more about the Ave Maria Mutual Funds at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
When the need for senior care arises, home is where the heart is. Visiting Angels provides home care for mom or dad up to 24 hours per day, including personal care, meals, and light housework. You may select your professional caregiver with Visiting Angels. More information at VisitingAngels.com or at 877-374-LIVE. That's 877-374-LIVE. Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care.
Beth, why is our health insurance so expensive? Our premium and deductible are so high. Plus, I don't want my family to support a company that doesn't share our values.
Kim, there is another option. Check out CMF Curo. It's an affordable Catholic healthcare ministry where members share their medical costs in community, and it's pro-life. We joined last year and have saved thousands, all without compromising our values. Just go to MyCatholicHealthcare.com.
CMF Curo sounds exactly like what our family needs.
Yeah, that's MyCatholicHealthcare.com.
If you believe in the power of prayer, Ave Maria Radio invites you to look at their website to submit a prayer request at AveMariaRadio.net. Your prayer requests are shared with hundreds at the Dominican Sisters of Mary, Mother of the Eucharist, the Servants of God's Love, the Monastery of the Blessed Sacrament Cloistered Nuns, the Family of Faith Apostolate, and the staff of Ave Maria Radio. Just go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on the Community tab to submit your prayer request today.
The cover of this book is really beautiful, no pun intended, with this gorgeous stained glass window and all these colors and a purple, deep purple background. The title of the book is The Sound of Beauty, and our guest is the author of the book, Michael Curick, the subtitle, A Classical Composer on Music in the Spiritual Life. And quickly, just a little background on Michael. Classical compositions of his have been performed on five continents. His numerous awards include the prestigious Academy Award in Music from the American Academy of Arts and Letters, and his 2017 album, The Sea Knows, debuted at number one on Billboard's traditional classic chart. And his doctorate is in composition from the University of Michigan. There you go. And he serves on the faculty of Vanderbilt University. Congrats on the book. Is this something, Michael, that has been on your heart for a while to talk about and to put on paper?
Yeah, it's something that didn't take too long to write because I'd really been writing it my whole life or thinking about it. But I came back into the church, I'm a revert, about 11 years ago. And then as I was working as a composer, spiritual truths just started to, analogies and symbolism and started to hit me. And I said, this is amazing. And I've got to share this with someone. So I wrote a few articles that were published and did a few talks at Catholic colleges and things. And eventually it just sort of, I was gathering lots of material and research, and then finally it was bothering me to not get it out. So I just wrote it all down and sent it off. And my good friend Joseph Pierce was really the champion of it. He said, oh, I'll give this to Ignatius and see what they say.
Well, anything that Joseph Pierce supports, you know, is going to be good. He's a friend of mine, and I just think the world of him and his writing and his knowledge on the faith and of all things Catholic and beyond. Yeah.
And he was kind enough to write the foreword of the book. So,
can't beat that. What an endorsement. Well, let's talk a little bit. I'm curious about your reversion. I don't want to give everything away because we want people to buy the book. By the way, it's from Ignatius Press, A Sound of Beauty, A Classical Composer on Music and the Spiritual Life. So what started your journey back home, Michael?
Well, I was an active Protestant evangelical, but I read this book by Thomas Howard called Evangelical Is Not Enough.
I love that book.
And it spoke to exactly what I was feeling as a Protestant, that there was an imbalance between immanence and transcendence. In other words, everything in my Protestant experience was sort of transcendent, and I felt I was trying to live life on some spiritual plane in a continual state of ecstasy, and it didn't relate to my physical life and my real world experience as much as it should. And I found with the sacramentals and the sacraments, particularly, of course, and the Eucharist above all, that now everything was connected. It wasn't in a compartment anymore. So that brought me, and I came and I visited Mass for an entire year and just watched and listened to Scott Hahn and watched EWTN. And mm-hmm. then finally I went to confession and came back in.
Yeah. Well, what would you just drifted away, or why did you leave in the first place? Just curious.
Well, I wasn't well catechized, for one thing, and I didn't have a strong foundation. And I didn't go straight to becoming a Protestant. I went straight to sort of agnosticism and existentialism, and I was all full of myself as a philosopher and so on, like a lot of people. But then I knew that was bankrupt eventually, and Protestantism, you know, was there and sort of easy to go back to. So that's where I went, unfortunately. But finally, I came. I mean, I'm not putting them down, but for me, I really, needed the church, and I've just been so happy, you know, for these 11 years. And I married a convert.
Well, converts, I think, are among the best Catholics because they study their way into the church and they teach us so much. I mean, there's been so many great converts over the past 10, 20 years. But let's talk a little bit about when you're applying this to music, looking at, you know, Al always says we have to look at everything through the lens of mm-hmm. Scripture and the teachings of the church. So how does that apply in your music?
Well, I think that music, first of all, in a practical sense, I'm kind of a bad boy in composition circles because I don't write avant-garde music. I believe in beauty, truth, and goodness, and I write music that is coherent, that people can understand in the tradition of the classical composers of the past. So right away, I'm sort of was blackballed by some academic circles because I'm not writing atonal, you know, kind of music and avant-garde music. So that's a very practical effect. But for me, there's much spiritual truth in music. Music is a kind of incarnation, and it has a change. It takes sound and changes it in substance, or seems to change in substance, like the Eucharist changes. But it's really an illusion because music is not a person, and it doesn't have, you know, personhood, but it holds up a mirror to the personality of what we are feeling, and so we imbue it with a kind of personality in our minds.
When you're listening to particular kinds of music, you can, how do I want to say this, you hear God. And I'm not just mm-hmm. talking about religious music. I'm talking about beautifully composed music.
Exactly.
Where you can, that God is there in that beauty.
Yeah, very much so. And, you know, when you're working with the raw materials of music, people, I think, don't understand that what music is. It's really a physical creation in the physical, just like a tree or a sunset, because it consists of particles of matter in the gases of the atmosphere, being shoved in the sound waves to our eardrums, which are a membrane that receive them. But it seems to be this mysterious, invisible thing that just floats in and floats out. But in fact, it's part of God's natural creation. So it points us to him. He could have made us with no ears. He could have made us telepathic. And he didn't have to create sound, but he did that and gave it to us out of love and for something beautiful to enjoy and with which to draw ourselves closer to him.
We're talking with composer and author Michael Keurig. The book is The Sound of Beauty, A Classical Composer on Music and the Spiritual Life. If you have a question, like to join the conversation, 877-573-7825, 877-573-7825. The book is from our friends at Ignatius Press. We'll also give you the information on the Catholic Connection archives at AveMariaRadio.net, The Sound of Beauty. I was telling you that when I saw the book and picked it up and saw the title, I immediately thought of one of my favorite films with some of the most beautiful music, which also has, of course, very strong Catholic influence in it, and that's The Sound of Music, which I think is one of the most beautifully put together musically and visually films ever.
Amen. Yeah, and The Sound of Beauty is just, it is a little bit of an allusion to that, I think, but it alludes to truth, goodness, and beauty, which I talk about a lot in the book, so...
So how do you view music now? Yeah, compared to when you were away from the church, how do you view music and the importance in a person's life, especially a Catholic person's
life? Yeah, and that's a great question, and I talk about it a lot in the book in regard to helping the spiritual formation of your children who are studying music, because there's so many spiritual traps of ego, of jealousy, and, you know, we have to think of music in the light of constantly, you know, my wife is a music teacher and in the pre-K through eighth grade level, and they always pray the Saint Cecilia prayer or a prayer to Saint Cecilia before each lesson and each rehearsal. And, you know, that's one way I start off is in prayer, and it comes out of prayer. What, you know, what should the, because I can write, I have a doctorate in composition, I can write in any style, but what do I say? What does God want me to say, and how to say it, and why? You know, I have to have a mission statement for my own work, and I had to, you know, as a Catholic, I had to develop one in a way, so that I wasn't just fooling around and wasting my gift.
So, in terms of your work as a composer, are you still employed as a composer, would you say? What are you doing now in terms of, you know, putting together compositions and bringing music to the world?
Well, I'm working on the next compact disc, or if you will, album. They don't say CD, not everybody has CDs anymore, but I'm writing a symphony, which is, I hope, in some way analogous to... Kind of George MacDonald, Tolkien, C.S. Lewis, in that it's about fairy, it's got a fairy tale emphasis. And but I'm professionally, I'm a professor of music composition at Vanderbilt University. Okay. That's my day job. And but I am able to keep that job because I keep composing, and I have all sorts of music being performed. So I divide my time between going to live performances of things I've already written and coaching musicians on how to play it properly, and just home in my studio writing more music. And so, it's something that's just in me. I just hear music and I have to write it.
Yeah. It's like the gifts. God put that gift on your heart. I mean, that's what that's your gift, that's your talent, and you're giving it back. I mean, my gift is the gift of gab. Everybody has a gift. Mine's a gift of gab. Yours is a gift of music. Yeah. We're talking with Michael Keurig, a classical composer, and he's also written this beautiful book, no pun intended, The Sound of Beauty. Mm-hmm. We have another segment with Michael, about 3 more minutes left in this one if you'd like to chat with him. 877-573-7825. He's a revert to the faith. And as the foreword was written by our friend Joseph Pierce, so that in itself would be worth just buying the book, because everybody loves Joseph. He's amazing. But you want to dive into this book because it is really very powerful. So before we take a break, I have to ask you, and we can talk more about this and we can back Michael, but when you look at some of the music today and way it's I want to say it nicely, butchered, your thoughts and some of what is being fed, especially to our young people, and called music.
Yeah, are you talking about popular songs?
Yes, mm-hmm. Popular.
Yeah, well, you know, first of all, the lyrics themselves are kind of deal breakers for the spiritual life in many songs. And so I worked with my wife to create a virtue ratings system for that kids could use to, and they have a chart that has the virtues, and they find the virtues if they are there in the song and give the song a rating, and they find out if it's worthwhile, you know, or if it's just junk food or if it's actually bad. And that kind of thing is just to help form discipline or self-examination in students or in young people is important. I don't think they think. They're just fed what the radio gives them.
Yeah.
And exactly. I also encourage people to be active listeners. Choose their own playlist. Don't just take what somebody gives you.
Especially now because you have such an opportunity to do that with the internet. Let's take a quick break, Michael. Don't mean to interrupt you, but we're going to get cut off if we don't. 877-573-7825. I want to find out more about this virtue rating system and where we can get a hold of it. Michael Curick, his book is The Sound of Beauty, from our friends at Ignatius Press.
Bishop Robert Barron on the priesthood.
I've been a priest for 31 years. It's a call to a total gift to Christ. It's a total gift of one's life to be conformed to Christ. You know, and that's why I felt it when I was a young guy and I was kind of getting into religion and understanding it more deeply intellectually. It just began to hit me with a great clarity that if this is true, if God is real and God is a supreme good, well, why wouldn't I give my whole self to God? Why would I get distracted by anything else, you know? Now, again, I'm not saying that should be true for every single person on the planet. That's the way it hit me when I was a young guy, was I want to give as much as I can, my whole self, to Christ. So there's something heroic about that, where you do eschew a lot of things. You say no to a lot of things so you can say massively yes to Christ and to his demand. I think that's a heroic quality of it.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
How serious is our responsibility to participate in furthering the common good? Very serious. According to the Catholic Catechism, participation is the voluntary and generous engagement of a person in social interchange. This obligation is inherent in the dignity of the human person. Participation calls, first of all, for us to be conscientious in exercising our responsibility in areas where we are directly involved, our families, our children's education, and our work. As far as possible, the Catechism urges, we should take an active role in public life. This leads to the Catechism's conclusion that nations which allow the broadest possible citizen participation are the nations to be lauded. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Almost 30 minutes past the hour. Hope you're having a beautiful Monday morning. Phone lines are open if you'd like to join the conversation or have a question for our guest. Author of a new book, it's called The Sound of Beauty, written by Michael Curick, a classical composer, on music in the spiritual life. A lot of the book dealing with music at the liturgy, at the Mass. Also, I'm really curious, because in the book I know that you have this appendix on the virtue ratings, which would be so helpful for families. I was telling you during the break that I was driving around one day, and I can't remember even, I think I had it on some, I don't know what station I had it on. I was flipping the channels and needed a little upbeat, so I listened to some disco channel or something, and there was this song on, and it was a new song, and it had a great beat, and I love to dance, and I'm kind of getting into the beat and everything, and then all of a sudden I start listening to the words, and I was like, oh my goodness. And I immediately turned the channel and changed the station. I couldn't believe it. I won't say it because this is a family show. What they were promoting in that song. It was disgusting.
And that was on the radio?
It was on the radio. Mm-hmm.
Because when they listen online, it's even more uncensored. And some horrifying things. But, you know, if the lyrics promote intrinsic evil, that's the thing the church, you know, I mean, the church gives us a lot of prudential judgment to have our own tastes in music where it concerns our private listening. But if the lyrics are intrinsically evil, say if they promote abortion, then, you know, that's a deal breaker for us as Catholics to discern. But, it's bad out there.
So tell us a bit more about the virtue ratings that you have in the book.
Well, What we did, we've even got a chart in the back that we did, that she, my wife, did with one of her classes, with a Taylor Swift song, apologies to Taylor, but she got a sort of medium rating on that particular song. And it had things like, you know, she had learned a hard lesson by being, picking the wrong guy, and she's gonna know better now, you know. So there was a certain amount of quality in, you know, learning a lesson. Of course, she should have known better to begin with, but, you know, you find the things in there. There were elements of fortitude and, you know, we had the actual specific virtues listed, and they have to score each virtue on a point scale and then add up the points. And they have, there's a blank where they say why that virtue was evident in what line of the song. And then, and the kids took that home and, took their favorite song and did the rating chart and brought it back, played the song for the class, and everybody discussed kind of why, whether they agreed with that person's evaluation. And so it was very instructive for the kids and interactive. And this is in the book, and it's free for anyone to copy and any teachers out there.
Great.
To use.
Awesome. Yeah. We're talking with author Michael Kurek and composer. His book is The Sound of Beauty, a classical composer on music and the spiritual life, from Ignatius Press. The phone number, if you'd like to join the conversation, and Gina is going to join in just a second from Colorado Springs, 877-573-7825. Hey, Gina, what's on your mind this morning? Thanks for calling in.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Professor, thank you so much for your book and your writings and your points of view.
Thank you.
I, too, have been very concerned. I am a classical musician, and for 18 years I managed the classical music station here in Colorado Springs.
Wow.
And I've seen the so-called music and the lyrics, and the power of music is such that it can move nations. It can change thinking, and that is why so many of the dictators when they came to power, they changed music because they knew the power of music to move an entire nation's thinking. And so if you have music with lyrics such as we have today, think what it is doing to the mentality of our young people and to their souls and to their point of view. It's shocking.
Yes, and you know, the thing is, a lot of people listen exclusively to vocal pop songs and not to instrumental music or classical music. They listen to maybe some movie soundtracks, which are mostly derivative from classical music. But in the book, I people have come up to me after talks and said, I always wanted to listen to classical music, but I never did, and now I don't know how to start, and I can't pronounce the names, and I try, and it's boring. And, you know, so can you help me? So I put in the book also a kind of beginner's playlist. Here's things that, if you love the Nutcracker of Tchaikovsky, here's 20 other compositions that you'll also love that are melody and beautiful, uplifting, because instrumental music speaks to the mind without words in a deeper way than words can speak. And I think it should be part of a balanced listening diet.
Wow, beautifully. Gina, thank you so much and for your work in classical music, and appreciate you calling in. Thank you so much. And we have more calls. If you have a question for Michael, 877-573-7825. Okay, inquiring minds want to know, what's your favorite? If you were to pick a couple of your favorite classical compositions that we would be familiar with, maybe, what do you think?
Well, I love Brahms' symphonies, and he has a story. You know, lots of classical music tells a kind of story in wordless story and sound, and his themes are like characters in a play, and they undergo character transformation and so on. And they, you know, he transforms you or takes you to a place of transcendence in the course of this kind of narrative argument. And it ends up absolutely victorious, you know, like in the end of his second symphony. So that's one of my favorites. And then I love Ravel, just for sheer beauty, you know, of the harmony and sound.
All right. What about any contemporary music that you like that you think is pretty good to listen to? Just out of curiosity.
I happen to be married to a wonderful music theater performer, singer, and so I go to all her shows, and I love a lot of musical theater. I think it's especially the classics, Rodgers and Hammerstein, and things that are like that, that offer. And that, see, that's what we need to give our children is alternatives to what they're being given, and that's one of them that they like, that you can easily get them to buy them tickets to, you know, when the Sound of Music or some show is being done live in your town, you know, get some tickets and take them to pizza and go to it and give them more choices, you know. And the musical theater has a lot of, there's still good things, and you still have to look, you know, carefully, but especially the classic ones are a great resource, and the kids still like it remarkably, whereas you can't get them to listen to Frank Sinatra or something necessarily.
Yeah. Well, the Sound of Music is something that no one ever gets tired of. I don't care how old you are, how young you are. It's just, it's so incredibly beautiful and so Catholic. I mean, the whole theme, her being a, was thinking about being a nun and that, but the whole, the family and the struggle and just everything that they went through to stand up for truth and beauty. So very powerful. Michael, thanks. Great conversation. God bless you and your work and this new book.
Thank
it's
you.
The Sound of Beauty by Michael Keurig. The subtitle is A Classical Composer on the Music in the Spiritual Life.
And
it's
you can
Ignatius.
Also just go to michaelkeurig.com.
All right. And that's K-U-R-E-K. Yep, K-U-R-E-K.
And you can hear music for free there.
There you go. Hey, if it's free, it's for me. That's what I always say. I like it. Thanks, Michael. MichaelKeurig.com. Again, last name spelled K-U-R-E-K. The book, The Sound of Beauty, from our friends at Ignatius Press. 36 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back on a Monday morning. And Bobby Schindler joins us to comment on a story from Michigan that's making national headlines. You don't want to miss this. Stay tuned.
Stopping you from becoming a Catholic?
Why can't women become priests?
I don't understand why I have to earn salvation.
How is it possible that God created everything?
Why do I need to confess my sins to a priest?
Why is the Catholic Church so unwilling to wreck?
The Catholic Church is too rich.
Catholics worship Mary and are committed.
As far as I'm concerned, all religions are equal.
You are called to communion with Dr. David Anders. Today, 2 p.m. Eastern, on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
On the journey to the heart of the Catholic faith, all roads lead to Rome. In Roman Encounters, Cardinal Gerhard Ludwig Mueller explores Catholic teachings critical to the life of the Church. Delve into pivotal topics like where the Enlightenment went wrong and the right way to be Christian in our skeptical age. Roman Encounters, the latest release from EWTN Publishing. Available now at EWTNRC.com or call 1-800-854-6316.
Hi, I'm Dr. Stan Williams, and this is Facts for Christianity. It's hard for us to accept that others don't always share our opinion about the authenticity of Christianity. So we debate and argue, hoping to either persuade or discover a new truth. But too often we end up arguing over opinions and not facts. And although our opinions are often facts unto themselves, they're still not facts to anyone else. Arguing opinions is like trying to fill a bucket with no bottom. We need a bottom, something better than opinion to hold up the evidence. We need facts that our opponent will accept. Not just one or two facts, but enough and of the right kind that you'll be prepared to make a reasoned defense to anyone who asks you about the hope and the faith that is within you. Study history and logic and know the facts for Christianity. To explore more, go to AveMariaRadio.net. Under resources, look for me, Dr. Stan Williams.
A story that continues to make national news from southeastern Michigan, University of Michigan Mott Children's Hospital, is where this young man is, and our friend Bobby Schindler from the Terry Schiavo Life and Hope Network. Bobby, you're on your way to southeastern Michigan right now, correct?
That's correct, yes. Thanks for having me, Teresa.
Sure, sure. Give us a summary for those who are not familiar with this story and why it's so important.
Well, it's only been a couple weeks. Bobby Reyes had an asthma attack and went into cardiac arrest. And from that, I guess he went without oxygen and suffered a pretty significant brain injury. So he was airlifted to this C.S. Mott Children's Hospital in Ann Arbor. I think they're a part of the University of Michigan healthcare system. And it was within a very short period of time, Teresa, the hospital, the clinicians told the parents that Bobby was, you know, so-called brain dead. And we're going to take steps to remove his ventilator, which would have most likely ended his life. But the mother was simply asking for more time. She wasn't prepared to make that decision yet, particularly, I guess the mother was really understood the issue and did a lot of research and saw that the brain needs time to recover. And within a week's time of deciding to end their son's life was just unacceptable to her, which I totally agree, and began fighting the hospital and asking more time to see if the son can get certain treatment and hopefully start to improve.
Now, what's the latest in terms of the court case? My understanding is there was another decision that came down that's given them, what, only one more day?
Right. The hospital is being very aggressive, Teresa, and they seem to have dug in their heels on wanting to end this boy's life. And the attorney who is fighting is doing everything he can. And essentially, tomorrow's hearing is to ask the court for more time, because there is a lot of people and there is a lot of efforts that are looking into finding a facility that would take Bobby. So the mother really doesn't want to deal with this hospital anymore, but she is asking for more time. So we can find another hospital that would continue and agree to treat Bobby.
All right. So what are you seeing across the country? We were talking about this during the break, that there are a number of cases similar to this young man's situation and the family that they're involved with right now. What are you seeing across the country and around the world, Bobby, that's really heating things up?
Well, as you know, Teresa, in response to my sister's death, our family starts nonprofit. Well, we've really served as patient advocates. And I got to tell you, we are seeing more and more frequent calls from families that their loved ones are being pressured by the hospitals to end the lives of their loved ones in a very quick period of time. Like, there's this rush, Teresa, to stop treatment, and many times it's under this brain death diagnosis, and oftentimes. The brain death diagnosis comes along with the organ procurement organizations that are also pressuring the families into, you know, their loved one donating their organs. So, and so, Teresa, I got to tell you that the last 3 weeks we've had 4 calls from families where their loved one has been diagnosed as being brain dead, and every one of these calls, there was an organ donation company that was pressuring the family into ending their loved one's life. It was Arizona, South Dakota, North Dakota, Arizona, Texas, and now this one in Michigan.
So what's going on? What's at the heart of this, do you think? Is it money? Is it agenda? Is it both? What do you think, Bobby?
Well it's always money, unfortunately. It seems to be anyway, Chisa. But what's even more, there's this irresponsible rush to judgment by these doctors, and I don't know if they're being pressured by insurance companies or the administrators. But the one thing we have learned in research, and there's an organization, I believe it's called the Milman Report, and I believe that's the right one. And the organ donation business, Teresa, is a $20 billion a year industry. There's a huge demand for organs out there, and the supply just does not meet these demands. So I think it seems to me, especially by the calls, the number of calls that we're getting, is there's getting more and more pressure to obtain these organs, and I think these brain death diagnoses, which is what they need to harvest these organs, are being made in a very quick period of time before even giving these patients a chance to see if, in fact, they can respond to certain treatments.
Wow. So what do you do? Because anybody can find themselves in that situation.
Right. Well, the thing is, Teresa, much of the principles and the policies and the laws are really in favor now of hospitals and clinicians making these decisions, with the families really in a position not to be able to overrule the hospital, so to speak. So really, it becomes individual fights where families, first of all, they have to understand that they can fight, they can question the doctors, they can question these diagnoses, and then they have to look into resources to see how, in fact, they can stop the threat, remove the threat. And that's, many times, that's where organizations like ours and what we do, we help these families to try and buy them time. Look, that's what we do, Teresa. We don't know a lot of the medical details that's going on with your loved ones, but I will stand behind families and advocate for them when decisions are being made within hours or even days to end a life without giving the person the chance to see if, in fact, they can respond to certain treatments. It's just, as I said, an irresponsible rush to judgment. So I think, to answer your question, we need heroic advocates, Teresa, people that are going to stand up for loved ones if they do feel like they're being rushed or pressured to ending a loved one's life without giving them a chance to see if they can respond to treatments or therapies.
Yeah. So any like gut on this, Bobby? I know you can't predict the future, but in terms of where, because this has gotten a lot of publicity, especially here locally in Michigan, this is a pretty big story.
Well, I think it's because he's so young. I mean, that's one reason. He's 14 years old. And all the research, Teresa, it all points to in fact, there's two doctors, Dr. Joseph Finn and Adrian Owen, and they're doing a lot of research on the brain and the brain's capability of recovering. The one thing mm-hmm. they're seeing more than anything is that the brain needs time, more than anything. It needs time, in fact, to see if it will respond to certain treatments. Well, all of our brains are different, and our brains might take, you know, a certain amount of time before it does respond and start to improve. So, the future, I honestly, Teresa, I hate to sound so negative, but I only see this issue getting worse because of the monies that are involved, because of our culture and this embracing of death. This attack on the dignity of life, the ethics, mm-hmm. the medical ethics, and the bioethics movement, and how they're convincing us and indoctrinating us to believe that some people are unworthy of being cared for. It's all this is intertwined, Teresa, and it's become a mindset among the culture that people that need this treatment and long term care just simply aren't worth it, and it's very frightening. And I don't know if it's ever going to get turned around at this point.
Well, you would think. I mean, doctors are educated and trained and, in the Hippocratic Oath, do no harm, right? And you would think that with all the developments, as you just said, the research showing and so many cases of people being and of their lives, suddenly turning around, on a moment's notice in terms of this brain development and giving the brain time to respond. I mean, we saw the story Breakthrough, right? I mean, that whole story about they thought he was pretty much a goner. They said, there's no hope. And the doctor came back, a few days later, said to the mom, your son's a miracle, and gave him hope to continue that type of work and research. You would think that they'd want to continue and see, gosh, where is this going to lead us? This is very hopeful, the fact that the brain does recover if it's given time. I mean, it seems to me they would be interested in this kind of a thing.
I don't know if you're right, Teresa. I don't know if it's ego. I was just telling my mother the other day, you would think with these doctors in particular that she's dealing with, you would think that the doctors would want to prove them wrong.
Right.
That they would want to be wrong about the diagnosis and not feel as though they can't give this person the chance. Teresa, I make a point on our website to post stories of people that have been given no chance at any type of recovery, that in fact have recovered after a terrible diagnosis, the worst diagnosis you can possibly receive, but yet they defied odds. And it's interesting, Teresa, it's always a miracle. The doctors always want to attribute it to a miracle. And perhaps there is some intervention from God involved here, and I know the power of prayer. But at the same time, maybe these people just need a time. In fact, again, to respond and give the brain the chance, which it does, it has the capability of healing itself. We're finding that now to be true. And maybe the brain just needs time instead of these quick rushes to judgment to end the life because these doctors think that, what they see initially, that the patient has no chance. And many, many dozens of times they're proven wrong.
And the thing is, Bobby, this whole area, you talk about the dignity of the human person, the way we are created is so, and I want to say miraculous in the term of God's design, his detail, and how the body can heal itself and what can happen. I really think at the core of this, in addition to money, is this, as you said, this pride and this control. We are going to control everything. We are going to control when people live and when they die, whether it's abortion, whether it's assisted suicide, whether it's this kind of a situation that we're seeing with someone so young or a situation with your sister. This is all about control, and we are going to be the authors of life and death, even though our bodies are incredible, and there are so many things that we haven't even discovered all of it the way God created us.
I couldn't agree with it more, Teresa. And also, it's also disturbing on how quickly families don't want to at least commit or dedicate themselves to caring for their loved ones.
Oh, don't even get me started on that one. I'm going through that with my elderly mother and family members, and I'm the one who's always got to be in there screaming and yelling it's not. I laugh because if I don't laugh, I'm going to cry, because it's like constantly I have to be in the face of people saying, no, you're going to do this and this is going to happen, and this is constantly every day, Bobby, every day.
Oh, we deal with it all the time too, Teresa. It's very disturbing. And you heard that expression, right? I want to put them out of our misery.
Yeah.
It's we are called to care and love people regardless of the condition that they're in. And you know, sometimes, you know, we don't like the circumstances, but if God puts these people in front of us, we have a duty and responsibility and a moral obligation to care for our loved ones, not simply to find easier ways to kill them or end their life because we feel bad because they're suffering. We need to embrace suffering, obviously, as Catholics. We all know the value and the redemptive value of suffering with somebody. So it's disturbing what we're seeing today and how quickly we want to come to terms with justifying killing someone. And we saw it for what? With my sister for way back 15 years ago. And it's increasingly getting worse, Teresa. And again, I hate to sound so negative, but and believe me, there's so many good, there's enormous amount of good doctors out there and facilities and we deal with every day that want to help and understand the dignity of the human person. But then again, there's this growing movement of people that just don't respect life. And we say, well, look, how can we be surprised with what's going on with the abortion issue that we didn't think it was going to spill over into the elderly and other people that have disabilities and so on and so forth. So, you know, it's one of the reasons we're doing this hospital that we spoke about with you a couple weeks ago and trying to create a healthcare system that respects life and the dignity of the person. And you're going to be able to come there and not ever have to worry about dealing with these issues that we deal with, Teresa. It's emotionally draining hearing families that are already traumatized by their loved ones having experienced an accident. Now they got to deal with these doctors in these hospitals. And this negativity in this mindset that, you know, your loved one's not going to get any better. Let's just go ahead and end your life.
Right.
It's just draining, I'm telling you.
Yeah, it is. It's very, and you have to be very strong, and you have to be constantly present so they know that you mean business. Otherwise, they'll try to run ramshot. And I'm speaking from personal experience. You have to be there, and you have to show up, and you have to make your voice heard and let them know what your concerns are and speak to the doctors on a regular basis. It is exhausting. But if we don't do this, then they're going to be allowed to run ramshot over us and continue this type of awful, awful treatment or lack thereof.
And what a blessing to be Catholic, too, because we have the tools to help us get through this day-to-day stuff and deal with the evil that we're dealing with on it seems like on a daily basis, Teresa.
Yeah, and I'm telling you what, though, you have to be diligent, and it is exhausting, but you have to be there, and you have to let them know that you're watching everything that they do. I mean, seriously, you do. Otherwise, you know, they'll let things happen, and I'm not going to go into any detail, but they'll just let things happen, and right.
They want you to walk away. No, they want you to walk away. They want you to quit. They want you to be in despair and not want to fight these people. But no, it's the last thing we have to do, or the last thing we can do, because if we walk away, then just imagine what's going to happen or what can happen.
That's the time I'm grateful for my Italian temper when this kind of stuff comes up. Anyway, great talking to you. Thank you so much for your great work. Safe travels to Michigan, and please keep us posted. I know we're probably doing some follow-ups on Crest in the afternoon, and Bobby Schindler on his way to Michigan to help this family fighting for the life of their son, 14 years old. 14. Check out the great work of the Life and Hope Network at lifeandhope.com. Again, lifeandhope.com. We took more time with Bobby. We will get back to Gail next week. In the meantime, we'll be right back. Tell you what's coming up tomorrow.
Hello, this is Steve Ray. I'd like to invite you to go on a pilgrimage with me. Why a pilgrimage? It's life-changing. It makes the Bible come alive. We have several coming up in the fall and winter of this year. St. Paul Cruise, 9 biblical sites, Mexico and Guadalupe. It's very safe and beautiful, by the way, and many to the Holy Land.
Pick the pilgrimage that's right for you. Go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on the pilgrimage link. There's 2 coming up and a lot more to come. AveMariaRadio.net.
Beth, why is our health insurance so expensive? Our premium and deductible are so high. Plus, I don't want my family to support a company that doesn't share our values.
Kim, there is another option. Check out CMF Curo. It's an affordable Catholic healthcare ministry where members share their medical costs in community and it's pro-life. We joined last year and have saved thousands, all without compromising our values. Just go to MyCatholicHealthcare.com.
CMF Curo sounds exactly like what our family needs.
Yeah, that's MyCatholicHealthcare.com.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 10 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company, and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities. 4G LTE coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan cost goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile, everyday living, effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
Hi, I'm Al Cresta. The Catholic faith has enemies. We're Catholics. We have enemies. They are a danger to the faith. And yet we're called to defend the faith, to instruct the ignorant, and to love our enemies. These enemies abuse divine revelation. They abuse science and religion. They abuse our history and our past. They abuse power and wealth. We have to learn how to deal with our enemies by picking up a copy of my book, Dangers to the Faith. You can find it online at AveMariaRadio.net.
Continuing our pro-life conversation tomorrow with our friend Brian Kemper from Priest for Life and Stand True Ministries, Pro-Life Day of Silent Solidarity, and the latest on abortionist Klopfer and the new bodies that were found of the aborted babies. Sue Leibel will be joining us. And again, this all ties into the lack of respect, as Bobby Schindler was saying, for the dignity of each human life from womb to tomb. We have got to stand up, people, and be not afraid. They're not afraid. The other side, the culture of death, we need to be strong as well. We'll talk to you tomorrow on a Tuesday. Ciao, ciao.
You've been listening to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo. Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Our producer is Andrew Kruczek. For copies of this program or for more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Thanks for listening and join us next time for another edition of Catholic Connection.